The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, we made it through another week. It's Friday, everyone. Yay! And the weekend is just a mere moments away, literally, for me, anyway. And as usual, just there's crazy stuff going on. There's so much going on. And in a few minutes, we'll get to Rudy Giuliani's new correction statement. It's out. Yes, he had to correct himself. The man who came in and said he speaks for the president, I guess not so much. Yeah, so we have that. We have what's news for you. Will Bunch is here today to talk about, our endangered news industry, as it were, and what he calls Bernieism. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. The NRA convention is going on in Dallas. Today, we are a gun-free zone. We will not be dealing with it. We'll get into it a little bit next week, I'm sure, at some point. But Trump is speaking, as far as I can tell. So this is counter-programming. Escape from Trump. You know, I don't understand why CNN and MSNBC carry all this shit live. I don't know if they are right now. I don't have a TV here in my studio. But I know that they were carrying, they carried Mike Pence and at least the beginning of Trump's speech. I say enough already. CNN carrying Trump's rallies is the reason we have Trump as president in the first place. Seriously, if they hadn't given him all that free media time, I really don't think he would have caught on as he did. You can't change history, unfortunately. Before we get into today's what's news, and there's a lot to cover, I gotta play this clip for you. You know, I don't watch Fox. I couldn't tell you what channel it is on my DirecTV. I have no idea. I understand some people who do what I do for a living feel it's their, duty and responsibility to watch it. I can't. There are some people like my husband who get a little bit of comic relief out of it. I can't. It makes me angry. It gives me agita. But every now and then a clip will surface, as it happened today. And usually when I play a clip from Fox, it's someone like Shepard Smith, who's a news guy who's on in the middle of the day, who's not one of their opinion guys on at night, who, you know, is just in the pocket for Trump. It's Trump TV. It's state-run television over there. But there's a guy named Neil Cavuto, and I think he's sort of in the middle between a journalist and a talk show host. Apparently, he's occasionally right on things. Well, today, I guess it was yesterday, he railed against Donald Trump's lies, and he said it better than I could have. So bear with me. There's a reason. There's a method to the madness. This is a guy named Neil Cavuto from Fox who just eviscerates Trump. In a way that, I'd be proud to do it if I had come up with these words myself.
Let me be clear, Mr. President. How can you drain the swamp if you're the one who keeps muddying the waters? You didn't know about that $130,000 payment to a porn star. I think you did. Mm-hmm. Said you knew nothing about how your former lawyer, Michael Cohen, handled this until acknowledging today you were the guy behind the retainer payment that took care of this. You insist that money from the campaign or campaign contributions played no role in this transaction. Of that, you're sure. Thing is, not even 24 hours ago, sir, you couldn't recall any of this, and you seem very sure. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying you're a liar, you're president, you're busy. I'm just having a
devil of
a time figuring out which news is fake. Let's just say your own words on lots of stuff give me, shall I say, lots of pause. Like the time you said the Russians didn't interfere in the 2016 election, until a lot of Republicans had to remind you they did.
Mm-hmm.
Came back months later, and you said, well, I never said that Russia didn't meddle in the election when, in fact, you had a lot. Now, none of this makes me a never-Trumper, just always confused. Like when you claimed your tax plan was the biggest in U.S. history.
It wasn't.
When it wasn't. Or that the bill you signed to make it all happen would cost you a fortune when it turns out it is going to help make you a bigger fortune. Or that your job approval numbers really aren't that bad relative to other presidents at this stage when they're actually worse than most presidents at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
That can change. But what's weird is this pattern does not. Like the time that you said rumors of Rex Tillerson's departure at the State Department were false until they weren't.
Uh-huh.
Or that your former chief of staff, Reince Priebus, wasn't going anywhere until
he was.
Or your economic advisor, Gary Cohn, was doing a great job until he wasn't. When you absolutely loved Steve Bannon until you didn't. Swore by Jeff Sessions until you started swearing at Jeff Sessions.
Uh-huh.
Had your legal team locked in place until it wasn't. Denied reports you were ever thinking about firing Robert Mueller, even as you now threaten getting involved at the Justice Department. Now, none of this makes you evil, but I'm sure you can understand why even your friends say these inconsistencies don't make you look good or do anything to help advance your policies, many of which are very good, or the prospects for peace with North Korea. That is remarkably good. All this stuff you keep blurting out, remarkably bad and remarkably bad timing. It is not that these exaggerations and omissions and misstatements are now and then.
And lies.
More like now and then something else. Always something else. Like the time you claimed you signed more bills than any president ever, neglecting to mention the other four presidents, FDR, Truman, Carter, and Clinton, who all signed more. Or brag about the national debt going down by $12 billion after your first month in office, even though it soared by nearly $1 trillion now that you're 15 months in office.
Yep.
But it's not what you are omitting, Mr. President. It is what you keep stating and never correcting. Like when you said there was a serious voter fraud in New Hampshire, and there wasn't.
Nope.
Said the same about repeated claims of voter fraud in Virginia, and there weren't.
Yep.
Or that millions of illegals voted in the last election, but they didn't. Or the time you talked up your massive landslide in the Electoral College, even though three out of four presidents before you had bigger electoral vote landslides in their elections. Again, none of this makes what you say fake. Just calling out the press for being so a bit of a stretch. You are right to say some of them are out to get you. But oftentimes they're using your own words to bash you. Your base probably might not care, but you should. I guess you've been too busy draining the swamp to ever stop and smell the stink you're creating. That's your doing. That's your stink. Mr. President, that's your swamp.
That's your stink. That's your swamp. Wow. Pretty brutal words from someone on Fox. I understand from the chat room, Neil Cavuto is on Fox Business. It doesn't matter. They're all the same. I understand fewer people watch Fox Business than watch the Fox so-called news channel. It's all noise to me. And when one of them comes out and that strongly, excoriates the president for his lies. That's, you know, he wasn't strong enough on using the word lie. I don't know what problem they have with saying it's a simple word to say, L-I-E, you lie. And he lies with the best of them. Anyway, so I heard that this morning and thought, all right, that's a good way to start the show today. So there you go. And good on Neil Cavuto for calling him out for, you know, making up bullshit about the fake news. This has gone too far, and it's one of the things we'll talk with Will Bunch about a little later today. All right, but there's a lot of news to get to, so let's get started on the live What's News, shall we?
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
More fallout from the nomination of Ronnie Jackson to be Secretary of Veterans Affairs. This time, it's Vice President Mike Pence's physician who has resigned. Her name was Dr. Jen Pena, who, like Jackson, is a military physician detailed to the White House. She was among those who came forward with claims of professional misconduct against Jackson, talking to senators about his nomination, according to a person familiar with the events. And now she has resigned. A question that I saw on Twitter, I don't have the answer to, is, oh my God, Mike Pence had a female doctor? What did Mother say about that? Was he allowed to be in the room alone with her? I don't know. When Donald Trump's new lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, went on Sean Hannity's Fox TV show Wednesday night and admitted that the president had reimbursed his longtime personal attorney, Michael Cohen, for the $130,000 paid to adult film actress Stormy Daniels to ensure her silence about an alleged sexual encounter with Trump, he did so almost entirely in secret.
Having something to do with paying some Stormy Daniels woman $130,000, I mean, which is going to turn out to be perfectly legal. That money was not campaign money. Uh-huh. Sorry, I'm giving you a fact now that you don't know.
It's
not campaign money. No campaign finance violation. So
they funneled it through the law firm.
Funneled through a law firm, and the president repaid it.
Funneled through a law firm. When have you ever heard the term about money being funneled through a law firm that was on the up and up? Just saying. Anyway, the White House counsel had no idea Giuliani was going to go on Fox. Neither did the White House chief of staff or the White House press secretary or the new White House lawyer overseeing its handling of the Russia investigation. Just a month ago, Trump told reporters that he didn't know about the payment to Daniels or where Cohen got the money to make it. And, that revelation led to a lot of fireworks at the White House press briefing yesterday.
At the heart of every generator.
Whoop. On what he will do in terms of the JCPOA, we'll let you know.
And secondly, on the other topic in the news today, could you explain why the president, when he answered questions to reporters a few weeks ago about the $130,000 payment for Mike Cohen to Stormy Daniels, why the president was not truthful with the American people and with the people in the state?
As Mayor Giuliani stated, and I'll refer you back to his comments, this was information that the president didn't know at the time but eventually learned. Jonathan.
Take a broader view.
She just lies with such ease.
But can I ask you, when the president so often says things that turn out not to be true, when the president of the White House
when he lies.
Show what appears to be a blatant disregard for the truth, mm-hmm. How are the American people to trust or believe what is said here or what is said by the president?
Good question.
We give the very best information that we have at the time. I do that every single day, and
sure
we'll continue to do that every day I'm in this position.
But the president, I mean, he, when the story first happened, it said, came out that Ty Cobb would be leaving and Emmett Flood would be coming in. The president said fake news, said it was not true. He just, when he talked about the prisoners in North Korea, he said the previous administration had been, failed to get them out. These two of them were taken prisoner while Donald Trump was president. And obviously the totally conflicting statements on the Stormy Daniels payment, these are statements that are just not true.
When it comes to North Korea, I think you could also look at Otto Wambrier, who was detained during a previous administration.
That's not the question.
As one of the current detainees. And so that would reflect the president's comments that he made. When it comes to the last instance that you mentioned, as Mayor Giuliani stated, this wasn't something that was initially known, but later learned. And again, we give the best information possible at the time, and we're going to continue to do that every single day.
He started paying Michael Cohen back in February of last year. I mean, the reimbursement was happening long before the president was asked about this.
Is that a question or?
But I'm saying, I mean, how could he not have known? He was paying him back.
I'm not going to get into those details, and I would refer you back to the statements, pretty lengthy statements made by Giuliani both last night and this morning, as well as the president's tweets where they've both spoken about that.
Well, but don't refer them to Giuliani's statements because he had to correct his statements, which we'll get to in a moment. But first, just one more back and forth between Sarah Sanders and Jim Acosta of CNN, because Jim Acosta really calls her out. Were you lying to us then, or are you lying to us now?
Jim?
Just to follow up on that, the president did talk about monthly retainers in his tweet, and then Rudy Giuliani said that the president only knew about this 10 days to 2 weeks ago. How can you only be aware of something 10 days to 2 weeks ago, but at the same time being in the process of paying monthly retainers that apparently covered this reimbursement to Michael Cohen?
Again, I can't get into the details of the ongoing litigation. I'd refer you back to the president's outside counsel.
I'll just follow up on it. You said on March 7th there was no knowledge of any payments from the president, and he's denied all of these allegations. Were you lying to us at the time, or were you in the dark?
The president has denied and continues to deny the underlying claim. And again, I've given the best information I had at the time. And I would refer you back to the comments that you yourself just mentioned a few minutes ago about the timeline from Mayor Giuliani.
And
I'll cut it off there because it just went back and forth more like that. At least the reporters were calling her out on her lies. Now, as he was leaving the White House today to go to Dallas for the NRA convention, Trump took a few minutes to throw Rudy under the bus, basically saying that he got his facts wrong because he just started yesterday. He didn't just start yesterday. He was added to the legal team 2 weeks ago.
So Rudy knows it's a witch hunt. He started yesterday. He'll get his facts straight. He's a great guy. But what he does is he feels it's a very bad thing for our country, and he happens to be right.
All right, so that was outside the White House, and then at the air base before he got on Air Force One.
I will tell you this. When Rudy made the statements, Rudy's great, but Rudy had just started, and he wasn't totally familiar with everything. And Rudy, we love Rudy. He's a special guy. What he really understands is that this is a witch hunt. He understands that probably better than anybody.
Two peas in a pod.
Excuse me. But Rudy understands this better than anybody. But when he made certain statements, he just started yesterday. So that's it.
He just started yesterday. No, that's not it. He didn't just start yesterday. He started 2 weeks ago, and he should have known better. Earlier today, Giuliani confirmed that he'll be issuing a new statement. He said, quote, "It's a question of misinterpretation." And then he added of the president, quote, "He says he loves me. He loves me. Oh, he loves me." And even in that last clip I played, he said he loves him. Well, Giuliani's new statement has now been sent, and this is it. I read you the whole thing here. "This is intended to clarify the views I expressed over the past few days. These are my views. First, there is no campaign violation. The payment was made to resolve a personal and false allegation in order to protect the president's family. It would have been done in any event, whether he was a candidate or not. Second, my references to timing were not describing my understanding of the president's knowledge, but instead my understanding of these matters." What? Third, It is undisputed that the president's dismissal of former Director Comey, an inferior executive officer, was clearly within his Article II power. Recent revelations about former Director Comey further confirm the wisdom of the president's decision, which was plainly in the best interests of our nation. That's it. That's the entire statement that Giuliani released today. Amazing. Amazing. Giuliani is as much of a loose cannon as is Trump. I think I played this yesterday, but it's my favorite clip of the week, so I have to go back to it. Giuliani has reportedly warned special counsel Robert Mueller not to target Ivanka Trump in his probe, but said her husband, Jared Kushner, is disposable.
Ivanka Trump? I think I would get on my charger and go right into the run into their offices with a lance if they go after Ivanka.
At this point, sir, I honestly agree with you. I fear for the country. Let me go through.
Now, if they do Ivanka, which I doubt they will, the whole country will turn on him. They're going after his daughter.
What about his son-in-law? They've talked about him.
I guess Jared is a fine man. You know that.
Oh, my God.
But men are, disposable. But a fine woman like Ivanka, come on.
Men are disposable. But a fine woman like Ivanka? What the hell does that mean? I really want to know. I mean, as far as I can tell, Giuliani, he's had, I think, as many divorces as Trump has had. He seems to think women are disposable, as does his boss. And why is Ivanka untouchable? She is a special advisor to the president. He brought her into the White House. She has an office there. She's privy to stuff from not only the campaign and since he's been in office, but before that, all of his shady business dealings. She's more complicit. There's that word again. Complicit. Than probably anyone else, because she's probably closer to him than anyone else. Watch out. Ivanka will be questioned. What did Rudy say? He's going to go after her with a lance or something? Hold on. I got to hear the beginning of this.
Ivanka again. Trump? I think I would get on my charger and go right into their offices with a lance.
I'd get on my charger and go right into their offices with a lance if they were to go after her. Go after her? What? Question her? Because she's above the law? Any of the Trumps above the law? This whole thing is just so disturbing. I mean, really creepy, disturbing time. All right. Giuliani also said that any interview the president might give to Mueller should be limited to a few hours and only specific questions about the 2016 election. Didn't he say that this was going to be over in 2 weeks? Go figure. I don't know. On Thursday, NBC erroneously reported that the government had wiretapped Michael Cohen. They set the record straight on the fact that feds used a log system to monitor phone calls from Cohen's phone before raiding his offices and residence.
Earlier today, NBC News reported that there was a wiretap on the phones of Michael Cohen.
No,
President
not
Trump's
a wiretap.
Longtime personal attorney, citing two separate sources with knowledge of the legal proceedings involving Cohen. But we've got a correction to that now. It's not a wiretap where they're listening into the phone calls, but something else specifically. Let me bring in my colleague Tom Winter here to explain. There's always a difference here when you hear the words wiretap and
yep.
surveillance, mm-hmm. and the level of detail of the surveillance. Sometimes it's monitoring when a phone call comes in. Sometimes it's overhearing. Explain what we reported and what we now know.
So, Chuck, based on information from two independent sources who have a long-term track record of credibility in providing accurate information to this news organization, they today, earlier today, based on that information, we reported that there was a wiretap on Michael Cohen's phone, meaning that they were able to listen into conversations from phone lines associated with Michael Cohen to any other person that he might have talked to. And in part of that reporting, we said one of those phone calls was between a phone line associated with Michael Cohen and the White House. Now three senior U.S. officials are telling us that this is a it was not a wiretap. Instead, it was what is referred to as a pen register. In plain English, that means it's a log of phone calls that were made from a specific phone line or specific phone lines. In this case, mm-hmm. we know Michael Cohen had several phone lines. And so in this case, they were able to see who he called or who somebody using his phone lines called, but they were not able to listen in real time or record those conversations. So it's an important distinction, Chuck. I want to add to that by saying that it doesn't change necessarily the legal bar here in order to get a warrant of this type. It's still a very serious matter because they right. would have needed to fill out a significant affidavit and be able to go down a significant road to get this approved by a federal judge.
And that's the difference between fake news and a mistake. NBC made a mistake. They corrected it and corrected it kind of in depth. Fake news is made up shit that Fox delivers on a regular basis. In other news, Arizona teachers return to the classrooms. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey signed a portion of the budget bill that helps fund teacher raises yesterday morning after House lawmakers debated the bill into the early morning hours. Teachers will get an average raise of 9% and then 5% for the next 2 years. They also won $400 million in education funding to partially make up for recession-era cuts, that according to the Associated Press. Although the raises were lower than what teachers wanted, they are an improvement over the 1% raises Ducey originally proposed. Over in the House, Speaker Paul Ryan, soon to be former Speaker Paul Ryan, backed away from his controversial decision last week to fire the Reverend Patrick Conroy, the House chaplain. On Thursday, yesterday, Conroy rescinded his forced resignation in a letter to the Speaker, and then Ryan agreed that Conroy would stay on. Don't you love it when stuff like that happens? And finally, the April job numbers are in. The economy added 164,000 jobs, dropping the unemployment rate to 3.9%, the lowest level since December of 2000. And that's a bit of what's news for now. Coming up, Will Bunch of the Philadelphia Daily News and the Inquirer joins us. But first, a look at the Green News Report with Brad and Desi.
With this latest reckless decision, the EPA did not just jeopardize our planet and our health. They also broke the law.
17 states sue Trump administration over rollback of car emissions standards.
This is a worst case scenario for government ethics. I feel like I want my head to explode right now.
More new ethics problems for EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. Pakistan sets all-time world heat record for the month of April. Plus, Russia launches the world's first floating nuclear power plant.
Fantastic. What could possibly go wrong? All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We are killing our planet. Let us face it. There is no planet B.
Yes, there is. It's called Mars, and Elon Musk is going to fly us there, and we will all be eating Matt Damon's poop potatoes. Okay?
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Scott Pruitt used to brag about the fact that he had sued the EPA 14 different times. Well, I guess what comes around goes around.
Yes, it certainly does. A coalition of 17 states and the District of Columbia filed suit against the Trump Environmental Protection Agency on Tuesday, arguing that the administration's attempt to weaken Obama-era fuel economy and emissions standards for cars and trucks is against the law. The states, led by California, allege the rollback is arbitrary and unsupported by evidence and would increase health care costs and climate change impacts. In a press conference, California's Democratic Governor Jerry Brown was characteristically blunt.
He's breaking the law. He's flouting the Clean Air Act and the legitimate needs and well-being of the American people. This is about health. It's about life and death. Pruitt and I suppose his boss, Mr. Trump, they want people to buy more gas, create more pollution. Hard to believe, but that's the fact.
The 17 states represent 44% of U.S. car sales. Governor Brown and some auto industry analysts warn that weakening the standards could hamstring the U.S. auto industry because the rest of the world is transitioning to cleaner cars and trucks.
Which means they're going to be able to sell a lot more cars, and the U.S. auto industry is going to be caught out again.
More troubles for EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. Two of his top aides resigned this week related to Pruitt's questionable spending and ethics. Now, new reports reveal that Pruitt's exorbitantly costly trip to Morocco last year was actually organized by a lobbyist who was then subsequently hired by Morocco to lobby the U.S. government.
Nice.
Former federal ethics chief Walter Schaub told CNN,
"It's inconceivable in any other administration that he'd still be in this position, particularly because the whole point of the trip seems to have been to promote natural gas industry interests, and it's really not clear what an EPA administrator has to do with that."
Well, it depends if that EPA administrator is Scott Pruitt and has been funded for years by the fossil fuel industry.
And now the Washington Post reports that a billionaire who advised Trump on deregulation has himself received a special exemption from regulation. The EPA this week quietly granted billionaire Carl Icahn a special financial hardship waiver worth millions of dollars that exempts an oil refinery he owns from renewable fuel blending regulations. Icahn was forced to step down as a Trump advisor last year amid corruption allegations that he was using his position to benefit his investments.
Billionaire Carl Icahn got a hardship waiver
for a profitable refinery.
Poor guy.
Meanwhile, the impacts of global warming caused by burning fossil fuels continue to accelerate. Pakistan, on April 30th, hit 122 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, if confirmed, that would be a new world record for the hottest April temperature ever reliably recorded on the entire planet.
Wow.
But some good news for breathers. New York City this week announced plans to electrify their entire bus fleet by 2040. Even better news, Shenzhen, China announced it has already converted its entire fleet of 13,000 buses to electric, and they did it in just 3 years. In Hawaii, a bipartisan unanimous vote in the state legislature made Hawaii the first state in the nation to commit to 100% renewable electricity and a statewide net zero carbon emissions economy by 2045.
Nice.
And finally, Russia has launched the world's first floating nuclear power plant, and it's headed on a very slow barge to the Arctic, where it will begin operations sometime next year. It's part of a planned fleet of floating nuke plants that Greenpeace warns could cause Chernobyl on ice.
Not as nice. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. We'll be off for the next week, but we'll be back thereafter. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we are back, and I'm always always happy to welcome our next guest. Will Bunch is a staff columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News and The Inquirer. His columns are always worthy of a thought-provoking read, but this week there are actually two that caused me to reach out to invite Will back to the show. Hey, Will.
Hey, Nicole. How's it going?
Going okay. How are you doing?
I'm good.
I got to ask you. You said don't ask, but I had sent you a message yesterday about coming on today, and you said I was on a 14-hour bus ride from Gettysburg. Don't ask. So of course I'm asking. What were you doing in Gettysburg?
Don't ask. I'm an American who just put two kids through college, so. I'm always working, so that's all I can say.
I hear you.
But,
okay.
I haven't been back to Gettysburg since I was 5 years old. So
wow.
Only 54 years. Yeah, I know. I was a Civil War buff when I was 5 years old. So how weird and kind of embarrassing is that? In fact, I think when I was five, for Christmas, I got a Union soldier uniform.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was more interested in the Civil War at five than I probably am now.
That's fascinating.
But Gettysburg, if you're in the area, it really is actually pretty amazing. I mean, the monument is just, battlefield is just full of monuments to the troops, of course, on both sides, because that's the way we are in America, both sides, right? It's a beautiful area, and I really learned a lot. It makes you think about American history and all the lines from 100+ years ago to the present. You know, 150 years ago plus to the present.
So. And yeah, where we are now, especially in relation to our history, and what the founding fathers would say if they could get a glimpse of what's going on today. Oh my God. Can't even imagine.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's what they had in mind. So.
No.
Have you read the book How Democracies Die by two political scientists? Or
no? But I noticed that you wrote about it in one of these two pieces that I want to talk about today. I think the one on the about a free press.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I did mention that, in fact. But it really it's one of those books that takes all the things that, of course, you know, were happening, you know, from voting restrictions to restrictions on the free press, the gerrymandering, and, you know, it just makes you reconsider them in a totally different light, you know, to see them as part of this really alarming movement towards authoritarianism rather than just, oh, it's Republican politics or whatever.
Right.
It's like, no, it's, It's not just Republican politics. It's authoritarianism, and it's from the same playbook that authoritarians around the world either have used or, unfortunately, a lot of them are using right now. So, I'm at the stage in life where I listen to books more often than I actually read them. So mm-hmm. I was just listening to it now while I was outside playing with my dogs. When you think about Gettysburg and what was at stake there, and it reminds you of what's at stake now. It's just as important.
It is. And, you know, we are staring at authoritarianism. One of the things that you wrote was that you're worried about when it comes to removing Trump and his dangerous authoritarianism from the White House. That concerns me, too. I mean, will we ever have another free and fair election? I mean, take Russia and outside interference out of the equation. Just look who's occupying the White House and you know, control of both the houses of Congress. That's power that they're not going to want to give up very easily, and they're fighting with everything they've got to keep it, even if it means doing away with the Voting Rights Act, for instance.
Yeah, which I think that's a classic example, I think the two things I took away from the book that are kind of, well, it's more than two, I guess. The two of the things that are relevant is, like you said, I mean, just this unwillingness to yield power. So you see all these measures like, McConnell not having hearings on Merrick Garland's Supreme Court nomination and then mm-hmm. postponing that for a year. Or like you said, you know, not voting to renew the voting, you know, parts of the Voting Rights Act that were struck down by the Supreme Court. I mean, all of these changes are meant to hold on to power. I mean, you know, and they're all little things. Like I noticed a little item yesterday that the Republican Party said, when the 2020 election comes around, we're not going to run presidential primary debates anymore.
Huh.
Presuming that Trump is going to be the nominee. And, again, it's just kind of shutting down another avenue of democracy. So that's really interesting. The other thing the book really hits on, and I have somewhat mixed feelings about this because, Nicole, you and I both remember, kind of how the primary system for electing presidents became so prominent in the 70s. I mean, it was after the violence and mayhem at the 68 convention mm-hmm. and it opened things up and gave us candidates like George McGovern. And I know people like us thought this was a gigantic improvement, but you look back and you realize that the flip side of that was getting rid of the gatekeeper. This book, How Democracy Dies, really focuses on the role of political gatekeepers and how that doesn't exist anymore. And so, the gatekeepers who kept out extremist candidates like George Wallace, for example, in the past,
right.
Were not there to close the gate on Donald Trump. It does make, again, it makes you see things that have happened in kind of a different light, even though you know the whole story. It makes you rethink the why of why these things happen.
It is amazing. I never thought that they would let Trump get through. I just had faith that even though they were the Republican Party, that they would not allow him to get the nomination. I still to this day can't believe it got this far and that we have this madman in the White House.
I'm totally with you. I mean, I spent all my political capital at my job at the Philadelphia Daily News and Inquirer to lobby them to find some extra money in the budget to send me to the convention in Cleveland. And I'm glad I went. I mean, it was a moment, albeit a horrible moment, but still a moment in American history. And I was glad I was there on one level. But, to be honest, the reasons I lobbied to be in Cleveland were kind of for two things that didn't happen. One was, there really weren't a lot of protests. I mean, there was actually more protests in my hometown of Philadelphia during the Democratic convention than there were mm-hmm. in Cleveland. But the other thing that didn't happen was nobody made a serious move to stop Trump. And knowing what I know now, it was just silly and naive to expect such a thing was even a possibility. And that's really relevant right now, though, because, so many people still talk about what would it take to get some Republican votes to join in on impeaching Trump or on convicting Trump in the Senate if he were to be impeached, say if the Democrats take the House back next year.
Right.
And it seems like it's kind of a silly thing almost for us to waste our time debating. I hate to say it, but, you know, the same reasons that the GOP didn't stop Trump in Cleveland are the same reasons they're not going to stop him from being, they're not going to impeach him. You know, they're not, no matter what.
No matter what
comes out of the Mueller investigation or anything else.
I agree. Well, they're doing the whole gaslighting thing and saying, you know, the sky is green. He didn't do anything wrong. No collusion. No collusion. That's their clarion call.
And we live in an environment where you can get away with it. They spent 40 years after the Powell memo creating their alternative media organization that now spans from Fox News to Breitbart to, you know, the internet, which wasn't even invented at the time of the Powell memo, essentially. And they've created a big enough echo chamber that they needed that, you know, I mean, I know I'm kind of rambling a bit from topic to topic.
That's okay.
So stop me if I'm getting too far. But, you know, I'm working from home today and, so I've had the TV on a lot, but with the sound off, which I'm glad because, basically all that's been covered on, you know, CNN and MSNBC today has been, these lies from Trump and from Rudy Giuliani about Stormy Daniels and, you know, where the money came from and whether Michael Cohen was his lawyer or not and this whole thing. And it's really driving me crazy because, I mean, the thing is, everybody knew that the original story was a lie. And so now they've changed the story. But you know what? The change story is almost certainly, at least, you know, maybe it's got a few half-truths, but it's basically riddled with lies now. And, you know, tomorrow they're probably going to come back with another version that's also going to be a lie. And they're going to lie. And they're also going to lie about the reasons why they lied in the first place. And yet, you know, cable TV has this panel that spends 45 minutes analyzing each new lie as if this time it's the truth, right?
Yep, right.
It's like, oh, well, you know, first they said, you know, first, you know, Trump said he didn't pay, you know, the $130,000 for Stormy Daniels, which was ridiculous. So now they're saying he paid, but he paid in installments. So now we know the truth, you know. It's like, no, we probably don't know the truth. And, you know, a lot of these things, you know, if it's Mueller, if it's the, you know, the Manafort trial and other future indictments from Mueller. I suspect when the Mueller probe gets at things, they're closer to the truth. People are still going to be shocked at how different the scenarios of what actually happened are than from what we're talking about in the public arena.
Right. Well, and the reason being is, you know, the Mueller team does not leak. The leaks are all coming from the White House. And so, you know, we're not getting the stuff from Mueller. So we have no idea what Mueller knows and what he doesn't know. We should just expect that he knows pretty much everything that's going on.
Yeah. And the coverage this week of, or I guess it was this week that the weeks are running together, but the coverage this week of the so-called 49 Mueller questions was also infuriating because they weren't from Mueller. They were, you know, they were Trump's people writing down what they, after talking to Mueller's people, what they thought Mueller was going to ask. And who knows what kind of fidelity and who knows what kind of questions that, the Trump people that might exist, the Trump people wouldn't want that question to leak out that was just struck from the list, right? So,
right.
To defend my profession, the media, I mean, it's hard to cover, you know, people don't have experience or obviously we can see that people don't know how to cover a government that's, you know, foundational values is not telling the truth. It's just thrown the media for such a loop that people obviously don't know what to do. And I think, you know, if you turn on your TV this week, I think you'll see Exhibit A of that, you know, that they don't really know how to cover it, you know. And yet they're given such inordinate coverage to this that, it, you know, at the expense of some other things like, you know, what's going on with the environment and what's going on with ICE and the border and things
right.
like that aren't really aren't
no, it's,
getting as
it's
much
all,
coverage.
Because, it's all Trump all the time. I mean, just like during the campaign, as I was saying before I brought you on, CNN, I think, is complicit in his election because they ran those damn rallies from start to finish in the quest, you know, for the almighty ratings. Just like today, I think they're showing his speech at the NRA convention without getting that they're the reason they've promoted this guy to the position that he's in now. You have a piece up that you wrote a couple of days ago, Michelle Wolf's truth bombs aren't the only thing America's elite journalists don't get. And all the pearl clutching over what Michelle Wolf said at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I think some of these journalists need to look a little inward at the way they're covering this administration, because it's different than the way they covered the Obama administration.
Right, and they're still playing by these old fashioned rules that they're terrified of losing access. Mm-hmm. I mean, access journalism is the thing. I mean, you and I have both read these, Maggie Haberman or, the Washington Post does them too, Robert Costa, whatever, these stories that have 22 unnamed sources, right? Trump is a raving lunatic these days who's raging at his staff and he's furious. And, we're basing this on 22 unnamed sources. And that's become the bread and butter of these White House reporters, is that kind of story. And, the public is titillated. Obviously. I mean, those stories get a lot of clicks. I mean, people are titillated of the idea of, Trump, drinking 24 Diet Cokes a day and then going in these, caffeine fueled rages or whatever. Mm-hmm. People enjoy reading those stories, but it's, in the end, a lot of it is kind of gossip compared to some of the realities of what's happening. But in order to keep that access, in order to not, be banned from the Trump White House, you see, like you said, pearl clutching is exactly the right term for the way they reacted to, jokes about Sarah Huckabee Sanders and about Kellyanne Conway that were tough jokes, but they were fair.
Funny. They thought they were fair.
They weren't
about their appearance.
Well, I mean,
it might have been about Sarah's eye makeup, which I joke about all the time because it's ridiculous the way when she sees the makeup artist before the briefings. But I thought some of the criticisms were unfair. I thought, look, if you're going to get up and stand up before the White House podium and lie to the media every day and do it with impunity, then the media has a right to question you. And this White House Correspondents' Dinner, this is the way it's always been. And every year, it seems there's this outrage. Well, maybe they should just cancel the entire thing.
Sure, because, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, there's a lot of complicated threads going on there, and some of them are kind of at crosswinds to each other. But I mean, the bottom line is, it's an event that does nothing to help journalism and what the media needs to do. I mean, you have this bizarre situation where, I mean, the worst part is the public sees, the media, inviting these like movie stars and elite people and, hobnobbing with the rich and famous and putting on black ties, mm-hmm. and kind of cozying up to the powerful people that they should be skewering. And that's the worst of it. And then, so then you have this comedy stick, and then especially in this day and age, you bring in, I mean, comedians are increasingly the truth tellers, right? Of our society. And so you bring in a comedian who tells some hard and like painful truths that our modern, at least elite, I hate to make blanket criticisms of journalism, because I mean, there's so many amazing journalists in this country who are, they're covering City Hall in your hometown, or, they're investigating the local sheriff or whatever. And some of those people even were, and some of those people are doing it in Washington too. But I've used the phrase elite journalists, beltway journalists, but we all know the type. I mean, the highest paid people who really thrive on access, who are really, very cozy with the people they cover and are loath to criticize them. And so you get a scenario where Sarah Huckabee Sanders can get up on the podium and lie to these people day after day after day. And yet, after all that, they still defend her.
It was the defense of her that got me, by people like Maggie Haberman and Andrea Mitchell and those. But the more disturbing aspect, Will Bunch, I think, is where there's some good journalism being done at a time when this White House is not very press friendly, and I for the most part, I'd say the New York Times and the Washington Post they're earning their keep. But we have a White House that is vilifying them and calling, the media the enemy of the people, which should send a chill down everyone's spine, because the Fourth Estate is necessary to any democracy.
Right. And our media, by and large, hasn't come up with a framework to deal with that. And it's not easy. Like I said, it's not an easy situation. But I think the bottom line is, look, when it comes to, debating, tax cuts or the future of Social Security or whatever, sure, we're going to report all sides and we're going to be fair or something. But, there's some things that we can't be on one hand, on the other hand, about. And number one on that list is the First Amendment, right? You can't have journalism in this country without the First Amendment and the free press rights that are guaranteed there. And, I'd go even further than that and say you can't really have journalism in America without a functioning democracy. So I think other things that may not directly have to do with journalism, like things we were talking about earlier in the half hour, like restricting voting rights, in a way, those are a threat to journalism too, because anything that makes, just the fundamental, civil rights of our democracy imperils journalism. And so we need to see a new kind of journalism that, is somehow more forceful in defense of those, And I think, there are more aggressive ways to deal with something like the Sarah Huckabee Sanders situation than the way they're doing it now. You don't have to send your best reporters to those, ridiculous daily events. I mean, right. You can send college interns to be stenographers and, ask the question if necessary or whatever, or take down, record the ridiculous things that come out of that podium, but, your best reporters shouldn't be in that room. They should be investigating all the many things that are going wrong. That alone would be a start, I think for those journalists who were, over the top in defending Sarah Huckabee Sanders or a journalistic organization like The Hill newspaper, which said they were going to stop going to the White House dinner, not because the entire dinner has become a farce, which would be a kind of legitimate reason, but because they were, troubled by Michelle Wolf's tone and whatever. Journalism has a lot of functions in society, but one function journalism does not have is promoting civility. That's, real journalism is uncivil as hell, right? So,
and this White House is uncivil as hell.
I was very disturbed when, and I'm having a senior moment and forgetting her name, but the woman who's the head of the White House correspondent,
Margaret Talib.
So she was on CNN with Brian Stelter, who I think Brian Stelter does a great job every week, by the way. She was on with him the morning after, and was just troubled by the fact that that they couldn't offer civility, and she said something about unity and unity among journalists is, that just sounds straight out of
right. And the thing is, she's a comedian. She did what they hired her to do.
Well, yeah.
It's always a roast. And if you go back, every few years, they have the same complaints. I remember the one with Colbert, which I thought was so brilliant. And they still talk about that as if it was the biggest travesty in the history of the empire,
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's another aspect of this, which is, don't forget the thing that Colbert and Michelle Wolf also had in common, which is they both had very pointed parts of their monologue directed right at the media.
Mm-hmm.
And right at that issue of being too cozy to power and sucking up. I think Colbert lost. He made one over a big chunk of the nation, including you and me, with those lines. But I think he lost the room in 2006 when he went after the media. And then, Michelle Wolf did this entire riff, which was just so true about, the media needing Trump for ratings and the money that comes with that, and which is what you were just saying 15 minutes ago about all the coverage of, 40 minute uninterrupted coverage of his rallies.
That's right.
Because he was getting good ratings, and why he was getting good ratings? Because he's a demagogue, So they, they had a choice, and they said, we can promote a demagogue in American politics and make money off it. And
they did.
That was the choice they went with, And
right.
I can understand. I mean, I, um, I mean, now that Trump is, you know, the president, you know, with an asterisk, as Charlie Pierce always puts next to him. But now that he's a president, you know, I mean, his speeches, I think when he speaks to the NRA, I'm horrified, you know. By the way, if I can just say, I mean, this is also an aside, but I mean, I'm particularly horrified that Trump would address the NRA on, of all days, the 48th anniversary of the massacre at Kent State. You know, I mean, if those of us who have, you know, childhood memories, or some listeners obviously have more than, you know, older than childhood memories of that day. I mean, if you would have thought that 48 years later, the president of the United States would be addressing this, you know, guns rights, pro-militia, insane group. It's just horrifying.
It is. The whole thing is horrifying. It's horrifying that they're airing it, that this is on TV, that the president is there speaking to them.
I don't know. I mean, is it not newsworthy? I mean,
to carry the whole speech.
You know, he's the president.
I
guess you could go back and do highlights. I was particularly troubled in 2015 when you had, what did you have at that moment? I think 24 people were running for the White House. You know, you had initially five or six Democrats for a brief time, and you had, I think, 17 Republicans at first, who most of whom were pretty terrible. But you know, to have that many candidates and to give one candidate more coverage than all those other 22 or 23 candidates combined, which is what was happening in 2015, is just stunning when you think about it. I mean, it's just, you know, and it absolutely had a big impact on the race. It was self-sustaining. You know, it helped Trump rise up in the polls.
That's right.
And then when he rose in the polls, I mean, then it's like, well, he's the front runner. We have to cover him now. And, you know, what a story that this outsider is the front runner for president. And what a great story. And it's, you know,
and
like a lot of great stories in the media played its own role, pulling the strings to make that a great story, you know, quote unquote.
That's right.
It was a horrible story, but I mean, it was a great story to, in the eyes of people looking at it from Iranian's point of view. So.
Will Bunch, before we run out of time, I do want to touch on this, the other, your latest column. Bernieism is the idea America needs right now. Does it need Bernie to succeed? Can we go from the world of Donald Trump to a Bernie Sanders inspired utopia, in my word? Can we make that change?
Is it not the best of times and the worst of times right now?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, it's the best of times in the sense that when you look at where the American people are really at, you know, because, you know, modern polling is pretty good. And when they poll the American public, you know, a majority of people are supporting single payer health care. A strong majority supports, you know, some sort of universal access to college plan. A majority of people support raising the minimum wage. This idea that Bernie Sanders has a radical platform for America, you know, nothing could be more mainstream. You know, I mean, his ideas about economic justice, and it's partly to Bernie's credit. I mean, because he was out there in 2015, 2016, selling these ideas in public, you know, when he could. The times he could get squeezed on the national TV around Donald Trump, right? But he did get enough exposure to these ideas that they were already popular, obviously. But you know, he made them more popular. And you know, I think if we really, you know, and this gets back to how democracies die, but I mean, you know, who knows how fair this election is going to be in terms of voter ID and other things that might restrict people from voting, obviously. Like any midterm election, there's going to have to be a big focus on turnout. But you know, if the American voters turn out and vote what's in their hearts, you know, you're going to see a much more progressive Congress that's ready to enact, you know, really the most progressive legislation since FDR's New Deal and maybe more progressive. You know, so in my column, I look at that and I hail that. I think that's a great development. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it's like down in Florida, but I know where I'm in Pennsylvania, where there's a ton of we're in the middle of primary season and there's a ton of competitive races. And most of the ads are for Democrats and most of the ads are talking about universal college and they're talking about single payer health care.
And you
talking
have
talking about
You have Bernie Sanders in town today endorsing John Fetterman for lieutenant governor and then doing events over the weekend for a couple of other progressive Our Revolution candidates.
I mean, he's actually, because I didn't learn this till actually I posted the column, actually, but he's also doing an event with Larry Krasner, who's our amazingly progressive, you know, DA in Philadelphia on social justice issues. So it's all good. I mean, really quickly, I think the controversial part of my column, which some people will agree with, a few people might be bothered by it, is given this, does this make the man who'll be 79 years old in 2020, Bernie Sanders, does this make him a contender or even the front runner for the Democratic nomination? It's interesting because, the assumption, I think, at the end of the 2016 political season was that he had, created a political revolution.
Right.
And now he had 4 years to, coalesce that revolution, but also, pass the torch, as JFK famously said,
which
a new generation.
Which we're going to have to do. Will Bunch, we're just out of time. It flies by too quickly. Thank you so much. We'll save this for next time.